to make sure that there remains an abundant supply of energy around the world.
Replacing Russian oil. It's Monday, March 14th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Gasquio in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, North Korean missile tests, aiding Myanmar's internally displaced, China-Kenya trade issues, Asian-American figure skating dominance, international tensions expand to space. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Ukrainian officials say at least 35 people were killed and 134 wounded early Sunday when Russia fired cruise missiles at a military base not far from Lviv in western Ukraine near the country's border with Poland. Meanwhile, the United States has banned Russian energy imports and wants Saudi Arabia to increase oil production to mitigate a dramatic spike in gas prices. But just how willing Gulf states are to help bring oil prices down remains to be seen. VOA's Cindy Sain reports.
Fallout from Russia's invasion of Ukraine continues to rattle global energy markets, punishing motorists and others who rely on fossil fuels, days after U.S. President Joe Biden banned Russian oil, gas, and coal imports. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson will also ban Russian oil from the U.K. by the end of 2022. The European Union relies on Russia for about 40% of its natural gas and about 25% of the oil it consumes. The 27 EU leaders agreed to cautiously phase out their dependency on Russian energy. Russian President Vladimir Putin blamed the U.S. and Europe for skyrocketing oil and gas prices and said they are now desperate to reach out to major oil-producing countries they had previously sanctioned.
They are already trying at all costs to come to an agreement with the countries against which they themselves have imposed illegitimate restrictions. And they are ready to make peace with Iran and immediately sign all the documents, and with Venezuela.
With prices at the gas pump surging, reports say President Biden reached out to Saudi Arabia, but Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has not taken his call. Biden did speak with Saudi King Salman on February the 9th. Relations between the United States and the Crown Prince have been strained since the brutal murder and dismemberment of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi in a Saudi consulate in 2018. Biden has pledged to make the Crown Prince a pariah. But Secretary of State Antony Blinken downplayed any Saudi snub of Biden and said there is encouraging news on oil production from the United Arab Emirates.
It's just an announcement a short while ago, I'm not sure if it's been made publicly yet, about Emirati support for increased production when it comes to OPEC Plus, which I think is an important thing to stabilize global energy markets to make sure that there remains an abundant supply of energy around the world.
Experts tell VOA there are tensions between Biden and the Saudi Crown Prince. But Biden administration officials have been holding talks behind the scenes in Riyadh. Brian Katulis is vice president for policy with the Middle East Institute.
So I think the main concern is that at a time when gas prices are so high and we're looking to get some cooperation from other countries, including close partners that get and benefit from our security cooperation and assistance, that we would hope that they would do more to help the United States.
Katula said there is a risk for Saudi Arabia if it refuses to help bring gas prices down.
There'll be political problems here from coming from both Republicans and Democrats, that if consumers who are motorists simply don't want to pay the price, they'll look for someone to blame. And I think a country like Saudi Arabia it has been blamed before because of the OPEC embargo back in the 1970s. It could be easily blamed again.
Biden administration officials have also held talks with oil-rich Venezuela this month and are hoping for a breakthrough in the Iran nuclear talks in Vienna, which could eventually release Iranian oil back into the global market. But the talks have been paused due to new Russian demands for unrestricted trade access with Iran. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Chinese premier to step down ahead of leadership change. China records nearly 3,400 daily virus cases and worst outbreak in 2 years. Ukrainian diaspora in Australia rallies for compatriots under attack. Ukraine war gives Taiwan's military reservist reform new impetus. Armed resistance to Myanmar junta holding firm against military onslaught. Find complete coverage on all these stories on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia on this Monday. U.S. officials say North Korea's last two missile launches were tests of a new intercontinental ballistic missile system, describing the move as a serious escalation. But bigger tests may soon be on the way, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
When North Korea unveiled its massive new Hwasong-17 intercontinental ballistic missile at a parade in 2020, analysts quickly dubbed it the Monster Missile. Since then, the world has seen little of the Hwasong-17. North Korea hadn't tested it. That changed last month. U.S. officials say that's when North Korea conducted the first of two partial tests of the missile. They say a full test could be coming soon. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un says his country is preparing to launch a military spy satellite. On Friday, state media showed Kim visiting a launch facility. U.S. officials would see that as a thinly disguised long-range missile test. Ned Price is the U.S. State Department spokesman.
It demonstrates the threat that is posed by the DPRK's illicit weapons of mass destruction program, its missile program. These are threats that really strike at peace and security within the Indo-Pacific and beyond.
One of the reasons the Monster missile is so important is that it can likely carry multiple warheads, making it much harder to intercept. Ankit Panda is a nuclear policy specialist at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
If the North Koreans were to launch 10 ICBMs with a single warhead each, the U.S. technically, although our interceptors don't work very well, technically has the number of interceptors necessary to deal with that scenario. And so if the North Koreans place 2, 3, 4 or more warheads on a single missile, the arithmetic for U.S. ballistic missile defense begins to look incredibly unfavorable.
Analysts say putting multiple warheads on a single missile also reduces the need for mobile launchers.
This might sound a little strange because I think it's intuitive to most people that a country that builds ICBMs should be able to at least put them on trucks capable of launching them. But the North Koreans have had a difficult time building very large trucks that are reliable and capable of carrying and launching these missiles.
A satellite launch would dramatically raise tensions on the Korean Peninsula. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
Still to come on VOA Asia, the challenges of getting aid to Myanmar's internally displaced persons. Happening now, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan will meet with China's top diplomat in Rome on Monday to discuss Russia's war against Ukraine and its impact on regional and global security. Stay up to date with VOA or listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The conflict persists in Myanmar as Burmese forces have intensified airstrikes, particularly in the ethnic regions of the country. One of the hardest hit regions is Kaya State, where mountainous terrain and checkpoints have slowed aid relief to internally displaced persons, or IDPs. For VOA, Steve Sanford has this story from Thailand.
In eastern Myanmar's Kaya State, the Burmese army's indiscriminate use of airstrikes has continued unabated. On March 7, aid groups estimated there were nearly 200,000 internally displaced persons in Kaya State since the coup. where fighting continues between the Burmese military and anti-coup armed groups.
They have been facing lack of shelter. They have lack of food supply, and they cannot also buy from the market because of the SAC is blocking the main road and cutting the supplier to the region.
On the Thai-Myanmar border, relief continues to be delivered to refugees who have managed to cross over to Thailand. However, since the Myanmar army identifies all opposition groups as terrorists, aid groups risk being labeled criminals for offering them assistance.
It's really difficult because there are so many checkpoints, there are so many army controls, and if you are delivering aid to the IDP camp, so you basically you go to the prison, you go to the jail because you're supporting the helping the IDP because they don't want to help and support these IDP people.
Kaya refugees who have resettled in Thailand raise support for extended family members who are fleeing violence in Myanmar. Kaya volunteer Na Dardar continues to get daily updates from her relatives still on the run and in need of emergency supplies.
From what I know, they have to keep going. There's no place for them to camp. They can't sleep knowing that a bomb or a plane could be above them at any minute.
As Myanmar's conflict persists, civilians are asking for outside support to bring an end to the crisis. Steve Sanford for VOA News, Chiang Mai, Thailand.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. An alleged cybercrime group released a statement on Sunday saying it had stolen classified information from Toyota's main supplier, Denso, Japan's public broadcaster, NHK, reported. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. Kenyan artisans say they are losing the market for their products to Chinese imports. According to the Craftsman, the high quality and lower prices of Chinese-made goods put them at a disadvantage. Victoria Amunga reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Jua Kali, popularly known in Kenya as artisanal work such as tool making or textiles, has been a livelihood for more than 7,000 craftspersons at an open market in Kenya's capital for decades. Njoroge Masharia has been making charcoal stoves, commonly known as jikos in Swahili, for 4 decades. He says imports from China have edged out his business. Jikos from China are affecting us, he says, because we used to sell a lot before they started bringing them here. He says now we don't sell as many as we used to. They are cheaper than ours, but those from China are not better than ours. Ours are really good. National data show that Kenya spent nearly $4 billion on imports from China in 2021. Kenya sources a vast array of consumer and capital products from China while exporting $1.5 billion worth of goods to the Asian market. Traders like Magdalene Vivi, who sells imported kitchenware, says customers demand modernized products like non-stick cooking pots, commonly known as sufuria in Swahili.
If you suggest the aluminium or the stainless steel ones, they just keep on asking for the non-stick sufurias. So that's why we prefer having the non-stick sufurias over the other ones that are locally produced in Kenya. Because for me, I've not seen any non-stick sufurias made in Kenya.
An African Union study on international trade finds that the African continent is the largest market for Chinese goods. Some Kenyan consumers prefer the wide variety of the cheap products. Mary Wambui is one such buyer.
There's always variety. All the time you get new products and they have different types. And you don't get the same ones all the time. So every time you come, there's something new that has come up.
Wohoro Ndoho, an economist in Kenya, says a lack of strong automation and technology in Kenyan manufacturing means most products made locally are by craftspeople, not machines.
The Wakali sector in Kenya has very much been human power driven rather than machine driven. And so you find that it inevitably means when things are made in China, they can be made in bulk, they're made by machine. While we compete, they still beat up those karais for cooking mandazis with hands. And for every hour they make one, a machine can make 1,000.
The Kenya National Federation of Jua Kali Association told VOA that imports from China have cost them the regional market. Engineer Charles Kalomba is the Secretary General of the Artisans Federation.
Energy saving vehicles, which have got a liner, a clay liner, and they have just a metal, fabricated metal and the clay liner, and we used to produce a lot of it for the East African region. Today, there's a lot of influx of the same into the market.
Data from the Kenya Export Promotion and Branding Agency show that South Africa is the only African country among the top 25 nations exporting to China. Kenyan authorities are banking on the trade agreements to sell more to China. The agency's chief executive officer, Wilfred Marube, explains.
And there was a bilateral engagement in January, whereby some of the areas which were agreed upon and also a joint committee established was to basically to ask the question, how does the Chinese government and the Kenyan government work together to increase market access to Kenyan products, especially the agricultural products?
Tiku Shah is profiting from China's massive market. Shah exports up to 100 containers of frozen avocados annually to more than 1.4 billion people.
Now we have avocados, but it's going to be very high quality, very big volume. And a lot of us are not ready for that scale of business. It's big business, it's big scale, it requires a lot of investment, and it requires very dedicated market focus.
China ranked 11th among Kenya's top export destinations and accounted 2.3% of the total exports in 2020, according to national data. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Making headlines in Asia, the president of the International Paralympic Committee expressed hopes for peace as the Winter Paralympics closed in Beijing, but avoided mentioning Russia's war on Ukraine. Stay up to date with VOA or listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Many athletes are already looking forward to the next Winter Olympic Games to be held in Italy in 2026. Asian American athletes are sure to be well represented there, thanks in part to a new athletic alliance designed to get Asian Americans into the Games. VOA's Jessica Stone reports.
When 22-year-old Nathan Chen won Olympic gold in February, it sparked a moment of reflection.
I think representation is so important, and growing up being able to have characters like Michelle Kwan and Christiane Magucci.
Two-time Olympic medalist Michelle Kwan soon responded on Facebook, holding her infant daughter Callista.
It could not go to a more well-deserving person, somebody who persevered, who put in the blood, sweat, and tears, all the while representing our sport, Asian Americans, and the entire country so well.
Chen and Kwan are part of what's become known as the Asian American pipeline in figure skating. Four out of six on Team USA are all of Chinese descent. Overall, Americans of Asian heritage dominated at this year's Beijing Olympics, earning 3 out of 8 gold medals for U.S. Olympians. They also faced extra public scrutiny, especially when two Chinese Americans chose to compete for China. But for athletes like Chelsea Kung, it's not about who you represent, but what you achieve.
I'm like, at the end of the day, like, this is their choice, like, who they represent. And like, why can't we just, you know, celebrate and celebrate greatness at the same time?
Vicky Chun leads the athletic department at Yale, where Chelsea Kung and Nathan Chen are students. Chun has followed Chen's career closely.
He is such a role model that it gives Asians an opportunity to go for their dream.
Chun didn't have her pick of role models when she was a student athlete or an administrator. 10 years ago, she set out to meet one of the only other Asian American college athletic directors in the country, Pat Chun.
And I see his name tag, Pat Chun. I'm like, brother! And he's like, cousin!
Meeting her is like meeting someone that you'd actually been friends with probably for 30 years. So that kind of was the early start of what became a fast friendship.
In April of 2021, the two formed 4AAPI, a network to promote and mentor Asian American athletes in college sports and beyond. It launched after a spike in hate crimes against Asian Americans.
We have, you know, student athletes of Asian that are from, you know, that are Asian that worried about their own personal safety. And that's a hard conversation to have, to try to comfort them when they see random acts of violence against people just because of the way they look.
My main friend group is Asian Americans. We were just like shocked. Like at some points, I just didn't know how to discern like how I should go about life.
With 4AAPI, Asian American athletes now have a collective platform for advocacy. They're not only hitting their peak of athletic achievement, they are finding their voices so that others can follow.
I truly believe when you're young and you see someone hit a pinnacle and they look similar to you, you can relate.
Jessica Stone, VOA News, Washington.
Finally on VOA Asia, an American private spaceflight company mocked the head of Russia's space program following a war of words on Twitter. Plus, teams found an early explorer ship at the bottom of the sea. And NASA's photos from the moon commanded cash at an auction. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reviews the week in space.
Private spaceflight company SpaceX launched another batch of its Starlink global broadband satellites.
Time to let the American broomstick fly and hear the sounds of freedom. LD is go for launch.
The flight controller's jab follows a comment from the head of Russia's space agency in which he said Moscow's decision to stop exporting rocket engines would force the U.S. to ride brooms to space. Starlink recently delivered terminals to Ukraine, providing free internet service as Russia continues to wage war on its neighbor, knocking out communications along the way. Meanwhile, at the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan, images this week of the letters V and Z appeared on machinery removing OneWeb satellites from a Russian Soyuz rocket after the British company opted to suspend all launches there. Various single letters, including V and Z, appear on Russian military hardware, and according to TheDrive.com, the head of Russia's space program says the symbols show solidarity with Russian forces attacking Ukraine. From space and war to the bottom of the sea, where scientists this week found an early explorer's shipwreck. Lost to Antarctic ice in 1915, Ernest Shackleton's ship Endurance lies 3,000 meters below the surface of the Weddell Sea. From Antarctica, in a video call with Sky, historian Dan Snow calls what happened next one of the most epic survival escape stories of all time. Amazingly, the British Film Institute, or BFI, has clips from a film of the journey that captured the moment when Endurance met its doom.
It was crushed in the ice. It sank. They lived on the ice, floating around the sea ice for another few months. Then they took to small rowing boats. Then Shackleton took an elite crew of six men from Elephant Island, 800 miles to South Georgia, across the Southern Ocean, gigantic storms, hurricane-force winds. He then walked across South Georgia, the first person to ever do so, hiked across the glaciers and mountains of South Georgia.
Shackleton's ill-fated attempt to cross Antarctica by way of the South Pole triggered a scavenger hunt that lasted more than a century. Bankrolled by an anonymous donor, the crew of the Endurance 22 expedition dare not touch their well-preserved find that sank in waters too cold to sustain wood-eating creatures. Announcement of the discovery comes 100 years after Shackleton's death in 1922. Finally, the series of original NASA still images from the Apollo mission sold at auction for more than $171,000. They included images of the first and second people to walk on the moon, respectively Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. The buyer remains anonymous. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. That's all the time we have for today's VOA Asia. Make sure you find us on all our social media platforms. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane,
and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Cascio in Washington. Enjoy the day, stay safe, and be well.